So we used to do the push-up exercise, take 30 breaths and let the breath out and do as many push-ups as you can. My focus wasn't creating a business. My focus was creating a foundation, that of the breath, the cold, and the mindset, actually what covers now the Wim Hof method, you know, my dad's techniques.
Stephen, thank you for your time today. Please tell me and the audience a bit about yourself and your story. And then based on your story, I'll start deep diving into things that I think the audience will be interested in. But I guess give us like a quick summary. I know you have a long story.
Yeah, quick summary. A summary about me. Like 40 years ago, it started. No, it's just like I'm 40. I just turned 40. Enam, son of Wim Hof, of course. I built, work around my dad. He was really good in his beliefs, you know, in optimizing his body to do exceptional things. And I turned that into, Wim Hof method. You know, my dad was like Iceman, famous as the Iceman. But there was so much more to that, right? And his beliefs captured me also. And so I started to work with him. Like that is 13 years ago, 2010. 2009, we did a first little travel. We wanted to do a canyoning and pointing expedition in Spain. I met him on the couch at my sister's place at that time. And we had these ideas to do these activities again once a year. That's in summer for 2 months in the Spanish Pyrenees. And there it started a little bit, the cooperation between me and my dad, right? And from one thing grew to another. And finally, it became the Wim Hof method, which has been practiced by millions of people. But about me, I'm his son, oldest, brother of four from the same mom. I lost my mom when I was young. My dad was always there for us. And that way we grew up together and we're still together, all of us. And now I am having my own little family with my partner, Julia, with my beautiful little boy, Kai. He's incredible. I just said goodbye to him. It's like, different world, right? And that's a little bit about me and about what I do, I think.
That's beautiful. What has it been like being a father, Enam? And are there things that you sort of really liked when you were growing up from the way that your dad raised you that now you're sort of doing the same for your son?
Yes, playing with him. That's incredible. It's incredible to see every day there's something new. There's something new and something new to explore for him, for me to witness. And it's incredible to live that journey together, you know? He's just 13 months and 10 days now today. And it has been 13 months and 10 incredible days up till now. And everything before went really well, you know, and it was time because I'm 40, I'm having my first child. Normally, that's quite at a later stadium in my life, right? I've always had this trauma of binding, being with a woman and growing into a relationship. And this time it felt good. It felt this is the right woman and let's do it. And I lost my trauma there, my trauma of committing or my trauma of binding myself to a woman, to a relationship, something so to grow together. And that has been, the best choice in my life, I think. It has, been beautiful. And you hear it from every dad, I think. becomes like a little bit boring, but it is what it is, you know. It is incredible. And you just start looking at a different thing, a different way to watch things. Like more into developing something, a safe environment for this little one that has nothing to do with you anymore. No. But beautiful, incredible.
I'm turning 24 and I haven't really had like a long-term relationship, and I'm at the age where all my uncles, all my aunties, all my family friends, they're like, hey Andy, do you have a girlfriend yet? Have you found someone? I'm like, no, not yet. And I'm pretty happy with myself, but I'd love to find a best friend. someone that I could talk to every day, someone that can, like, we're on the same sort of, we love the same things, but I just haven't found a best friend. And, everyone, all my friends are like, "Hey, Andy, when are you gonna get a girlfriend?" But you're sort of, you found your partner. I don't know how long you've been with her, but you're 40 years old. Any advice for me?
Yeah, no, just keep on doing what you do. If you love being you and doing your things, that's great. There is no pressure, and there shouldn't be any pressure. There's no pressure in finding someone because you're not searching for something. Something finds you in the end, I think. But you can be open, you know, you can move yourself into certain environments to see that what attracts you, what do you love, and where can you find that what you love and what environments? Move yourself there, and that's it. I think that's what you're doing, right? If you feel content with your situation at this moment. So there is no hurry in finding something, or it's not about finding, it's about something gets together and then that's it. And the rest is history after that, you know. But before that, yeah. So something, future thing. And as long as you are there in the moment, it will cross your path at a certain moment. For sure. But I understand the family pressure, which is a good thing also. It keeps you sober. It keeps you sober because, yeah, when I was 24, I could lose myself also into a lot of ways, which, yeah, were good for that moment. And yeah, I wouldn't change anything up for now. And I'm 40. I found my relationship 2 years, 3 years ago now. It's gonna be 3 years, 21st of June, 20th of June, the longest day of the year. And yeah, and we already have a baby of 1 year and a month, so it can go really fast, you know, but it can also really slow, and that's all okay. Nothing. So yeah, just keep on doing what you're doing, man.
That's an amazing advice. I think one thing that does add a bit of pressure for me, it's like I've always wanted a big family, 10 kids, 15 kids. And if you want a lot of kids, you sort of need to find someone early. And I know I can't really rush it. You can't really find the person, it sort of just comes.
No, it's there on the moment, and 10, 15 kids, you have some time, you know. 10, 15 kids, it does mean that, yeah, 10 kids, it's like at least 10 years. Then you're going, oh, you're giving it some work. So, yeah, 24, girl of 24, that's a normal thing. But when you're 34, you know, my partner's also like 9 years younger than I, and she's on a higher level than I am. So, you know. That's all good. You have some time. There's no pressure about that. And you can get 10 kids also. Also within 5 years or 10 years, even. You know, it's okay.
And what was it like? What was your upbringing like from your dad? Were you doing like cold exposure since the age of 10 and doing breathing? What was your upbringing like?
Since I have been a baby, my dad used to dunk me in cold water and wash me with cold. Yeah, cold, that's what he tells me. Yeah, and yeah, what is it about growing up? It was just a normal thing, but a normal thing for us, not such a normal thing for our environment, you know. So I always got picked onto school on school. I've been bullied like till my 15th. Because yeah, because we didn't have money, I didn't have the newest Nikes. My dad used to come with slippers to school, you know, in his shorts, midwinter. And yeah, then for me it was like you didn't fit into those groups, right? And yeah, that was a little bit tough because my dad was always there for us. He was always our best friend. He was always playing with us. And he was very, very certain about himself. He was very confident about himself. Didn't matter what others would say or would think, you know. And I think that has been a beautiful thing. So I think my childhood till my 18th, at least, it was a great childhood. We didn't have a lot, but we had all the love. My dad was there always for us. Of course, we had some harsh, tough moments. Losing my mom on the way. Yeah, then first I lost my grandpa, which was yeah, the first moment you got to deal with death. And then a year later, I lost my mom. So there was a second moment I used to de deal with death, right? Or a loss. And yeah, that has been quite impactful, I think. And it has also resulted in some traumas of me not being able to bind myself or to commit myself to a relationship, for example. Took another 30 years or something, well, 27 years till I got my relationship. So yeah, that was a beautiful journey also at the same time. I wouldn't change anything because it formed me to who I am, and I'm content with who I am. So that's just incredible, incredible. But ups and downs, yeah.
Einam, over the last 30 years, were you seeing different sort of relationships? Did you have short-term relationships, or were you sort of on your own that whole 30-year period before you found your partner?
Yeah, relation. Not. I've never called it a relationship. Of course, these are relationships. You have relationships with your brother, with your sisters, with your friends, with your lovers. Let's call it lovers. But it wouldn't last, more than that term. It wouldn't last more than that commitment. So, a lover. Okay, I was very free. I was very open also about it. Eh? I never used words to get something. No, I'm a free spirit. I want to have my freedom, and it's nice to share some time together. That was a little bit of a thing, but never got further than that. Maybe once when I was 19 with a Colombian girl, and then she broke my heart, and then I never committed again. So it was a little bit like that. Very free and open, I think. Always straight, but free and open without commitment.
How old were you when your mother passed away, Einam?
13.
13.
Yeah, I turned 13. I was in 95. And yeah, it's like the way it went is like, yeah, she committed suicide, but we didn't see her. We were in the same house, but we were brought to a different house of my uncle. Yeah, so we were brought to a different house, and it didn't this message didn't get to us up till we were back in the Netherlands. And that was because my mom wasn't really there, she was sometimes she came for 4 months, then she went away for 4 months. So it was very normal to not have her around. And we were taken to the other house. Then in the Netherlands, we were like, hey, where's mom? And then my dad said, oh, mom is never coming back. And then, yeah, then we knew, of course. Well, I knew, my brother and sister still not. And I hid that. I hid that for like another 2, 3 years. My school, my mom and my dad would be separated. My mom would be in Spain. My dad would be in the Netherlands because it was already enough drama around me, not having the means, having a dad that comes, yeah, in shorts and in slippers to the schoolyard was already too much. So I hid it. I hid it. I buried it, crying for 2 years in my own bed, but never at school. At school, my mom and dad were separated. So that was a little bit the effect of losing my mom is yeah, trying to hide things, trying to keep yeah, how do you say this? Keep a different story than reality because it was already tough enough at that moment. And yeah, we never had a mom to say to, like we never had this woman caring about her kids, cooking for them, making sure that they are going to school safely, or we always had my dad, who was a friend of ours, also not a dad, but more a friend. He was our bestie. That was it, and was great and was needed. So yeah, those things become a normal, but losing her then and knowing that, oh, it's never coming back, that was like quite hard. So of course, it's normal. It breaks you. Till I started to talk about it, and that was a relief. Like that was a yeah, opening up. That was when I was 17, 18, like years later, 5 years later or something. Yeah.
And was Wim, when listening to his podcast and stories, he used to travel to Japan and go to all these around the world trying to figure out the meaning of life or figure out answers. Was he doing that traveling before he had the kids, during, after your mother?
When we were till my 15th at least, or till my mom died, he never really traveled. Maybe he went once to India, I think once for like 7 days or something. But that's it. He started traveling in from 95. From when my mom suicided, he started to do his things in extreme. And from that moment, he got noticed by television, you know, because he was diving up beneath the ice for a really long time. The first, it was in the Sloterplas. First time he caught it with Dutch Amsterdam television broadcaster, AT5. And he was just laying beneath the ice, you know, laying beneath the ice. And yeah, some passing by saw that and thought there was a dead body in the ice because he was there for like 5 minutes, 6 minutes, like really long times. He was noticed by television. From that moment, he started to travel. He started to travel to Finland, where he did the world record diving under ice. He started to travel to all these places. I don't think he ever has been. He's been to Japan in 2010 or 11, I think. But that's it. And it was for world record. The him challenging his life was actually the start of his traveling. And he loved traveling because he loved all these esoteric and these how do you say this? There's a word for it.
Different cultures, different
Yeah,
perspectives.
yeah. Yeah, the mysticism, the mystic environments, the things that he didn't know in the Netherlands, he only saw in pictures, or you know, that was where his imagination always went. So he risked his life for many years, many, many years, till I started working with him. And he traveled the whole world with that. But that was afterwards, not before.
Got it. And what was different between your dad before your mother passed away versus after? After he started doing all these extreme challenges, but prior he was still going to school with slippers and flip-flops, and he was like a yogi before, I guess.
Oh yeah. He was very interested. He was so on top of the game. He was incredible. He could do all the poses. He was very. I found a couple of videos in Dutch where they were talking, my dad and my two uncles, about these books and about what was brought forward. And like intermittent fasting wasn't called like that, but like intermittent fasting, like not having food for 30 days. And yeah, but that's not intermittent fasting. Now it's all, oh yeah, we don't eat lunch till afternoon. Well, I didn't eat lunch till evening, till the 6 o'clock, because we didn't have food on the table in those times till my 18th. So, but so he was very into these disciplines about doing things with the breath, doing things with the body, maintaining that, and it was incredible. He could do. He could, if he would do like push-ups, for example, he could do like 120 push-ups with a slap, but without taking a breath. Incredible. So that got all documented, and but it was just before his challenges with the ice and endangering his life with it, you know, putting his life on the, because those things were impossible at that moment. But he went further and further, further in. But so before he was very interested. If you call a yogi, he was a yogi, you know. It's all these yoga instructors, and that has nothing to do with that. He was a yogi, pure. It was incredible. He wasn't doing coffee. He wasn't doing all these external things, intakes. He was very passionate about having a clean, strong, lean body and mind, with that. Just afterwards, so before he was really like a happy person, open. Afterwards, after the death of my mom, he was very, very depressed, actually, really depressed. Like, yeah. And I was trying to find happiness again, you know, trying to find to be able to walk around with his feet on the ground. And yeah, he searched that into his challenges. He felt alive in those challenges again. Some sparkle, something that he was good enough. Maybe it had to do with that drive. Because yeah, your partner in life is abandoning you, right? She left you. She took her life. She left you. Why is that? You blame yourself. You can't. Yeah, that's what it is. Or you blame society. You blame. So yeah, and then my 18th, he found a different woman. Then at my 28th, we got to in touch together again, and he was still depressed. He was smoking, he was drinking, And that took on for another 3, 4 years to 2014, 15, that he was depressed. Like not the the person you see now is a happy, beautiful man with a mission. You know, he when it's about his mission, he's a warrior. But if you see him on the street, he's laughing and making jokes and really bad jokes actually, but very positive. You know, and that is something he found back maybe 7 years ago or something, I think. So there's also a roller coaster there. It hasn't always been the Wim Hof we know nowadays, but that's also formed him to be the Wim Hof he is nowadays. So a beautiful journey, I think.
Wow, so before 2014, when he was doing all those crazy challenges, he was still in a dark place.
Yeah, I think the relief came a little bit. It started to come when he got acknowledged for his because before my mom's death, he knew what he found was incredible after he lost everything. And then the mockery and the honing and people not having respect for what you do gets to you. It doesn't get to you when you feel confident. It gets to you when you feel lost. And that's what happened. And then the acknowledgement from science that he was able to influence his nervous system. And the first person in the world showing that the immune system and the autonomous nervous system can be influenced by will. That was the first person. Now you see all these breath coaches and breath master courses. Yeah, you can influence the immune system without bringing up his name. But yes, that was then not known. And that gave him a sort of confidence back, you know? He found something again. And that's what his drive now is. He wants to show that everyone is capable of that. R that study got reproduced onto 10 people. Well, it's actually a group of 18 people were trained. And then from those 18 people, 12 people got to be injected. You can read all about that study, 2014. I don't know if you got a link. Right now, I don't know the line of it. But that was a touch again with his confidence. And from there, he grew out of it. He got this depression, yeah, behind his back, you know?
And then Anam, when your mother passed away, you must have been around 15, 16,
13.
or 30.
13, 1-3.
Oh, 13, 13. So who looked after you for the next 10, 15 years?
5 years, my dad, till my 18th, and then he found this different woman, and there's Carolina, was a very smart woman. She was she fitted into society, something my dad didn't, you know. So he looked up to that. Even he was against this whole society. He looked up to those people, and he got caught by her. And then from there, from my 18th till 28th, we didn't have contact, me and my dad. So there was a big gap where my brothers and sisters also didn't have contact with my dad. My brother was 12, my sisters were 14, 16. I was 18. So for me, it was normal to get out of the house. That's normal in the Netherlands. You're 18, you go live and do your own thing. But for my brothers and sisters, not. They were 12, 14, and 16. And we grew up together, more or less. Without a mom, without a dad, and he went with this woman, and didn't improve his life. Actually, he actually got worse, you know. So yeah, that my dad best pal till my 18th. Afterwards, we had to find out ourselves, but also formed us, right? We learned how to live life. We learned. We were really. I think I've been the happiest moment in my life. Was when I was 28, when I left everything, I gave everything a place, right? Loss of my mom, loss of the safe nest, because yeah, you're losing your nest. That's something when it happens first time, and then having to take care of each other, that is something. But when you grow out of that, that's incredible. It's one of the most yeah rewarding things, or it forms you into something more beautiful, into something yeah someone who appreciates life on a different level, I think. So yeah, that was that journey.
How did you and your three younger siblings survive for that 10 years where you had, like, how did you have food, accommodation, money, and then your siblings had to go to school? How did you guys do that without a mum or dad?
Yeah, so the old house we were living in that was still there. It was a rental house from the suburbs, like the bad part of the Amsterdam. And eviction, there were of course eviction notes, but they can't throw out kids with that, you know. But they did turn down the electricity, so we lived there for a couple of years without electricity. Then the dad of my neighbor, my best friend in that time, he passed away like 4 or 5 years ago. Charles is called. His dad had a house on the kennels, and we were always welcome there. So, but his dad was an alcoholic. So what we did, we did errands for him, and then we could stay there. You know, that was a little bit the thing. But then in the Netherlands, there's also like a safety net. So my brothers and sisters, because they were still younger, got like 500. What was it? 500 guilders every 3 months each. When you're 18, it's gone. It's called kinderbijslag. That went to them, and I worked for my living since my 15th. I already worked. You know, I worked by the side of after school. You would go to the Domino's Pizza. You would do the work there. I worked at Domino's Pizza, New York Pizza. I worked at Dekamarkt, which is a supermarket. So that's the way I provided for myself. And them, of course, they got some money from my dad, whatever he had, because it was like it's a social security loan. So they had some money for food, but not the growing up with the parents, you know. Yeah, that was the way we survived.
Yeah,
At a
that's.
certain moment, €1, because there was afterwards, I was studying, and all I had left was €1 a day to buy my food. That was the lowest where I got, but I was able to pay my studies by myself. I was able to pay my little rental place, and so yeah, just surviving in a first land, you know, because yeah, we're not in a third world country or something. We're in a very safe environment, actually, but when you don't know the rules, it's also like it's also surviving for sure.
Did you move out on your own, or were you living together with your three younger siblings?
No, I got kicked out by Caroline, the ex of my dad. Yeah, suddenly we had to sit on table, and she said things about my mom that was, yeah, I was like a little bit rebellic about it. So I was kicked out. Then my two sisters were kicked out, and then my brother left by himself. He came to us because he couldn't bear it. She had two other children, and he was like being picked on a certain way, and he just left there. But yeah, my dad stayed. That's the way it went.
Got it. So your dad was still in Netherlands, but you guys didn't live together. You just didn't communicate for 10 years.
Yeah, I saw him on television, and the first time I saw my little brother, I have a half brother, Noah, was on television. Oh, you got a new child. Okay, that
Oh.
was a surprise, for example. Then later he got another one, but made out of love, Eden. It's a beautiful little boy. He's 5 now. So my dad is a dad. You know, he's not a grandpa. He's a dad, but he's now also, of course, he's grandpa now, but he's got the dad role now. And but you know, all these things needed to happen. All these things led to where we are right now. And where we are right now, we're doing something beautiful together. We grew together much stronger than many other families, which I have in my environment, you know, from my friends. My friend died of overdoses of speed. Other friend has a psychosis, is inside of a place where they keep them away from society. Other friend not died, but got hooked up on heroin, and look how we got out of it, you know, because there was a good foundation, I think. So all these things needed to happen, and we're having now our family. We're working into within with my dad into something that is helping thousands of people, And that's great. It's very satisfying, you know. So there's no regrets there. There's, yeah, a lot of tough moments which formed we learned from it, and now we came out stronger than ever, you know. So yeah, it's like maybe a little bit a lot on that history. It's something we don't I don't really bring forward, you know. And yeah, I don't like to have interviews actually, because it's not about that. It's not about what happened before. It's about what are we doing right now, and what can we do in the future? How do we grow that? That's what I'm focused on most of all, and what we're focused on as a family. We have our traumas. We have our discussions when we get together. We have our fights. Yes, and sometimes they get like really yeah heavy. But we always find each other again, and because we know how it is to not find each other, you know.
Tell me about that. When you were turning 8, how did you guys come together, and how did that sort of relationship start, and how did this whole journey of what you've built start? Good segue.
So I also I came back from traveling. I was 28. I didn't have a place to stay, so I stayed on my sister's couch, Isa. She had this house of the government provided when she was 18, because she didn't have a house, and she was on the list of, yeah, to get this social living. And she invited me on her couch, and my dad also was there because he was kicked out at Caroline's, and he also slept on the couch. But I did see him on television doing his extreme feats and such, and I just started my little company, Hof Outdoor and Incentive. Graduated like 2 years before of that within the university. Well, university, it's a Hogeschool in Holland. It's HBO. Well, it's a university in the States. And I was creating my outdoor expeditions to Spain, and I thought, hey, let's d do that together, you know. And from one thing came another, and from there we started to grow together a little bit. But it took years also to accept each other again, because yeah, what I did in those times, yeah, I saw something. My dad became famous as the Iceman. He was famous as the Iceman, risked his life. I saw an opportunity with that. I could maybe, yeah, to create something together using the fame, me using my structure and my entrepreneurship in that time, and doing something together. And that's what bit by bit came into what we do now. But it didn't start like, oh yeah, let's do Wim Hof method. No, not like that.
And what was the Spain expedition? Was it like a Contiki tour where you're taking people back country into the snow? What was the Spain
Oh,
expedition?
no snow at all. It was in summer. So what it was like, we used to do these canyoning trips with my dad when I was small, to my 15th. And that was awesome. It was awesome. You go with ropes, you climb up a mountain, and then you go through the canyon. You descend the yeah with help of the ropes, but there are also glides, and it's like a fun park for adults in nature. So, but we didn't have money for neoprenes, you know. So what my dad used to do is he would we used to guide these people together afterwards when I was 28. Without neoprene, through the cold water, like for hours, 4 hours or something. Of course, you heat up in between. You do the canyons where you can heat up, but there was nothing to do with snow, ice, or whatever. You know, that was the touch we had with the cold. But it was more about the activity, about the canyoning, about the climbing, and about the hiking, being in nature. That was it, actually.
And were you guys living in Spain and living near the canyoning site?
No, that was just in summer. In summer, we would always go back to Spain. We have family there also. And this was on a campsite, camping Peña Montañesa, where I used to work also as a waiter and as a safety guard, as all kinds of jobs I had there in summer. So it's where I also returned to. That was our base for our activities. But there was, yeah, we lived in the Netherlands actually.
And then, how did you guys get your first clients for the expedition? Like, was the internet around yet? How did you start
I
building
used
out?
to make flyers. I used to make these flyers with, yeah, with programs what were available then. and Hofaudrain incentives. And I created a website using HTML together with my friend Jantje, who helped me. I made a promo. I did a week of canyoning with my friends. That week you can still find on YouTube, canyoning in Spain with the Matis. And recorded that with the little GoPro's first version, and was the first underwater. Before the GoPro, you had an underwater camera of Samsung, I think it was. I'm sorry for the brands, but I still remember the cameras I used to film everything. And they're still out there, I used to put on the ropes. The ropes we still had from when I was 15. My dad had them in Poland, so we could pick up those ropes and create the puenting, where you jump backwards from a big bridge. I used to make the construction, and which I learned from my dad. And that was our activity. We had a promo video, we had a website, and we had some flyers. And that's the way. But the first trip was maybe we had like four people attending, 2 weeks. But with that, because I had a secondhand Volkswagen transporter, that would fit four people in the back seat. And that's the way we did it. The first 2 weeks, that money went to repairing the Volkswagen again, because after the second trip it broke down. After the second trip was great because we had the trip already done. So then I had to repair my Volkswagen. And at a certain moment we started to do workshops in the Netherlands, because in Spain you only have two months where you can do canyoning. You can do canyoning more, but it's not fun, and it's difficult because in the months, 2 months, people get holidays, and July, August, they do the canyoning and that kind of stuff. But then in the Netherlands, we had to do something also. So we started to give workshops, still without ice baths. And my dad was starting to teach people what he was always doing, his breathing exercises and a certain way of, and his yogic exercises. It was focused on that. Till we introduced the cold water plunge. We went into the water like in 2011, I think, of the park, Westerpark, Amsterdam. And we saw that people loved it, because before, no one would do ice baths and such if you wouldn't be a top athlete. And even there, it wouldn't be up. People were not doing ice baths nor breathing exercises. It was not done. People would look at you like, what kind of crazy person are you, But my dad took everyone, like eight people or something, took them into the cold water then, and we saw what kind of effect it had on people. They were doing something they didn't think they were gonna do or were able to do, and came out stronger and happy and full of energy. So we introduced the ice bath. And from there, we did the workshops. Till 2014, we've been doing it for 3 years. At that moment, there wasn't a lot of intention towards it. But from 2014, 13, 14, when the science came out, and then it became booming in the Netherlands. Our workshops filled up till 50 people every time, 3 days a week. Friday, Saturday, Sunday was incredible. We had all this thing. I had a new website in Inafire.nl. And we were focused on the Dutch market till Joe Rogan and Tim Ferriss did the podcast, and then we went berserk. But towards that, I already created the online course, which did nothing. Together with Bart and two other friends who attended one of the workshops in 2011, and making that, because my dad is like one person, you can't be giving workshops all the time. It's just not enough. If you want to create something worldwide, it needs to be. It was online at that moment. The online course started to do incredibly well with Joe Rogan, and then got a blast off. So bit by bit, bit by bit, step by step, for years.
And the first sort of workshops before the cold plunge, was it the 30 breaths, 1 minute hold, 30 breaths? Was the Wim Hof breathing technique already?
These are the techniques my dad has. He perfected those already for years. He's always been busy. And when he really went into the challenges since the death of my mom, 95, he also perfected those. There's a whole journey. So yeah, of course, that was already there. Just introduction of the cold water and knowing how to manipulate that strength with the breath to be able to resist that cold, to bring a counter force, you know, because the cold is a great force, and it takes you if you don't do anything counterwise towards it. You have to raise your energy towards it, you know, to be able to do it. So that already existed. It just did, it wasn't named the Wim Hof method because you can't patent any breathing or pattern or something. And of course, I've been looking to protect it because when at the beginning you have to protect things, otherwise others can just walk around with it. So instead of protecting it that way, I branded it and I attached it to a name, who is my dad, and not to the Iceman, but to Wim Hof, because Wim Hof is a person like you and me, right? The Iceman is just some superhero you look at and you're like, oh wow, what a nice trick he can do. But Wim Hof is like a person, you know, and a person you can maybe, well, maybe not identify yourself with, but see as like, okay, this is something I can adapt. Or because yeah, he's like a madman. He's like a like this natural force with a beard and but yeah, something that can relate to people and they can take away. I can learn something and adapt it or apply it to my own life. That's what we did. So there was also growth of a personal growth movement, you know, and we got into that place a little bit to show people, hey, these are simple techniques, but look what you can do. So we used to do the push-up exercise, for example, take 30 breaths, then let the breath out and do as many push-ups as you can. And people were doubling their push-ups, you know. For example, so that way we showed with an experience, not with words, but with an experience, do this and look at the output, amaze yourself. Ah, okay, that you can believe in, you know. You don't need to convince anyone, only if you just let them feel what is possible. That's what I started to do. Started to make these free little mini class videos to give people within 4 minutes the feeling that they could do so much more than previously before doing this little mini video. You already actually would give them the techniques, all they would need for free. But people love to learn more. They love to invest. They love to place some worth to something because, yeah, to do some, you know, okay, this, I need to do this and this. And that's it. It's boring. You want to invest, you want to dig, you want to discover new things. So that was the online course. And that's the way I did it. There was like a personal growth movement going on. And that way I would like give people a experience, my dad experience, my dad's teachings, of course. And from that experience, you have a dedicated person, you know, you have someone who wants to. He's a believer. He became a believer, and he just wants to support you and do and learn more. That's the what a little bit of the way well, we got to the Wim Hof method.
How did you scale so fast? Like you like did an amazing job in a very short period of time of really branding the Wim Hof method, getting instructors, having it accredited so that these Wim Hof instructors are worldwide. You know, in Australia, there are people who are, you know, Wim Hof sort of breathing instructors. So you like did it so well. Did you just do it all on your own, Anam, or did you have business people around you, mentors? Like you scaled it amazing.
No, it's just learning by doing. And of course, I met people like Bart Pronk. Bart Pronk is a really good friend now. He's one of our level three instructors also. And he helped us out because he was into marketing. And he helped us out with the creating the online course. He wrote it out together with two people who attended our workshop in 2011. So the online course was the thing to scale it, you know. The instructors teachers course, the first course we did were also four people. That was in 2014, 13, something like that, 2013, when you just started. And I just created these out booklets, you know. We would have the fundamentals, the basic course, the advanced course, and the teachers course. Three modules where people would come. I would place the exercises of my dad in, a little bit of explanations, and with the scientific explanation, it's where actually the instructors course started. Would translate the scientific explanation from Radboud University into something that people could read, And that way to start something off, you know, there was no business around. I wasn't the my focus wasn't creating a business. My focus was creating a foundation that of the breath, the cold, and the mindset. Actually, what covers now the Wim Hof method, you know, my dad's techniques. In what way can we create something that within this movement, the personal growth movement, people can apply? And the online course was the one that would scale it. And now, because my dad is so such an amazing, like it's incredible what he can do and what he was able to do while being sort of alcoholic at that time, while smoking at that time, while being depressed, still being able to do all these strange, crazy feats. You know, can you imagine what he had in hands? That's gold. And the only thing I did is like frame it. That's what I did. And learning by doing. You know, I think if I would have the right business people around me, this would have been like not a 10, 20 million euro business a year. No, it would be 100, 200, 400 billion euro business. But we're not, that was not our focus. And it's okay. But the name went out everywhere. And now you see it at the movement of, oh, breathing coaches. And doing breathing and cold exposure, it doesn't come anywhere, somewhere else than from us. And they just copy the work. You know, it's okay because we want to create this movement. But that's because my dad has been pioneering. He has been sticking out his neck. We have been sticking out our neck. And yeah, now this whole movement is going on. In Australia, there are a lot of instructors that just abandoned us, left us, or took our knowledge and went doing their own thing with ice baths and breathing and do their own certification. That's all good. That's the way people do when they don't need to stick out their neck anymore. It's where they use others. And then, oh, wait a minute. Now we have all this this whole field to grow in and but that's great. That's good. That's just a sort of yeah, how do you call it? We can be proud of that, you know. But as a businessman, I did not such a good job, I have to say, you know.
You did an amazing job being able to build out the course, get the name out, being able to even think about having instructors do it worldwide, being able to somehow get people, hey, if you do the course, now you can teach other people, you can build a business out of our sort of. So you did an amazing job, Aina.
Oh, thank you. That's
What?
thank you. But as a business point, I think I did a lot. I did not the job that Wim Hof method deserves, you know. But that's okay. The name does get out of there. It does help thousands of people. So from that point of view, from my dad's point of view, he's getting to fulfill his mission and fulfill his goals. And that to me is great because I stand behind those, you know, those are his. And I stand behind that and I'm very proud of that. I'm very proud to be able to support such a beautiful thing. And yeah, and I also have to learn. But the primary focus was to get this out. And I think that has been done greatly. Yeah.
And what's your current focus with the Wim Hof brand over the next 5 years or even today?
Yeah. I get it because I never look in 5 years or these kind of plans or business plans or I don't do that. I look at, okay, what is going on now? I'm actually at this moment, I've been 3 years like, oh, 3 years being taken hostage within our own code because when we started 7 years ago with a website, there were not these systems which are very easily to make. No, we had to do everything custom made. And now we're being taken hostage by that being having everything custom made, you know. I had a lousy developer who did a lousy job. Then you get so much stress and shit over you because yeah, the website needs to work. And right now my primary focus is to get the foundation back again, back on track. And the foundation at this moment is not the brand or the name that is out there. And it's accepted. It's accepted that breathing exercises and cold exposure is great for the health. And if you do these specific breathing exercises, you can see all these people who are beating all kinds of disease. We're not bringing that forward, like, hey, you can beat this and that, this, that disease, but it's happening. And these are like, people who are talking about it. So that foundation is done. Now I want to have the foundation done to create a safe environment for our instructors to be able to promote themselves, to bring and to help my dad with his message, but also earn their living, you know, because that's the primary income stream is now for our instructors. And I just want the website to be working perfectly for them. And so that's my primary focus. It's not within 5 years, it's within 6 months. And then I'll have time and room to think about optimization, to think about improving things. But at this moment, for the past 3 years, taken hostage by our own cult. That's what it is. Costs a lot of money. And then people ask, hey, but why are you charging €4 for the app? Do you know what I'm spending? You don't know what I'm spending. Hey, we're doing good, eh? It's not that we're doing bad. And I'm happy that we're doing good because it gives our space to be able to do good things in this world. We need that space. Otherwise, yeah. So we're doing good, but it can go much better. That's what it is. So I'm trying to get that foundation. That's my focus now at this moment. There's no five-year plan. There's never been a five-year plan. It's always now.
That's beautiful. Yeah, building, like right now we're building out studying.com, our education company. It's so hard to find developers. I worked in a startup in San Francisco. The developer held our app hostage and wouldn't give it to us. It's tough, yeah.
So you work with developers also? Oh man, what a shit house. It's not normal. And you know, the worst thing is I don't have any development skills. So I don't know what they are doing. You know, and they could tell me anything. And it's like, I hate it. I hate it because I don't have control over it. I can't put my fingers on. And it just happens. And every time it's more and more expensive and more expensive. And wow, I'm paying 10 times, tenfold what I've been paying like 4 years ago. But the same thing exists. It's incredible. I don't get it. So yeah, I'm trying to tackle that one now.
I've considered just like learning how to code just so I could be able to, but like.
It's not something I want to do. So, you know, now what I'm trying to do is to find the right people for the right spot. People who love to do what they do, because I don't want to invest my time into that. I want to invest my time into other things. And meanwhile, that everything goes well, I'm also okay. But I wanted to make it better also for the 1,000 instructors we have. They are making their living, you know, with it. And of course, if they are making their living, we're making our living and they are our spokesmen. So that's my focus now, to get this back on track and to find someone who's good at it and who loves to do this, you know, some CTO or something, I don't know. For the app, I found my cousin, Eric. Eric has been with Salinas, went from 14 to 150 hostels. I don't know if you know Salinas. He's been a big part of that. And he's family of ours. He's great. So we're now doing things together. And so it's keeping on within the family, which I love to work with people I love, you know. It's you don't put each other on the highest, and giving all. No, we clash, but it's good. In a relationship, it's good to make up again and grow out stronger. So yeah, that's what I'm trying to do. But so you with your course and the developers, is this the same situation you are in, or are you getting out of that? Or
so the app, that situation was maybe 2019 when I was in America. We were working on this healthcare app, and
four years ago. Wow. Because you're just 24, right?
Yeah, so I was working in the startup when I was 19.
20? Wow, that's impressive, man. I was like getting drunk and stoned at those times.
So I got lucky, really. Like, my situation's very lucky. Just another thing I was curious is like your upbringing. Like, you know, I came from, you know, single parent, dad wasn't around, low income, bullied. All my friends had the cool Nike backpack or the jackets, and I had to figure out how to make money if I wanted to buy those cool things. And that led me to become, you know, a business person, me to where I am today. And I always wonder, like, with my children, like, how do I give them the same adversities so they, because I want them to be strong people, but then I also don't want to hurt them.
Yeah, no, I think I don't know yet. Mine is 1 year and 1 month and 10 days, and but what I think, or at least what I want to do, is to let it up to him. What do you want to do? And as long as he's happy with, because you don't need a lot to be living, you know. We have survived with nothing. So you don't need a lot to be living, and and to be happy. Yeah, it has nothing to do with anything else than being able to live and do things that you love, you know. So I want to. I'm not gonna. I think best is to let them figure out themselves and guide them wherever you can with what you have learned, and that's it. And no pressure on that. They'll create their own pressure to do the things that, oh, this feels good, you know. And as long as they stay off the drugs, well, sometimes you can do something. It's okay. There's no pressure, I think. I don't know, but you know, when I was 13, I also like I used to this dad of my neighbor Charles. He was a businessman, and he showed Charles, he was 13, how to buy PlayStations, convert them to chip them, and then sell them with 10 games. You know, I learned that. And at a certain moment, we didn't have anything, but I, in my room, was the one with 14 years old that had a widescreen, like these what fat widescreens. I had the stereo installation with the cassette recorders, and I had everything I wanted by just looking at what they were doing. So you just gotta be the example, you know. Just do what needs to be done, what you think is okay, and then let them do the rest. They'll pick it up. Just living by an example, I think. I need to improve a couple of things, yeah, with my own, but I have some time for that. I think that would be the advice. I'm not 100% sure about it, but that's what I think.
And you're so right. Like, it's a very similar trajectory. I remember I went from not having any clothing, not any shoes, and all my friends having all these branded things. And then I just started buying and selling, bought from Gumtree, Craigslist, resell on eBay. And then in a year's time, all of a sudden I was surrounded by Louis Vuitton wallets. I had like Supreme jackets and they were worth $2,000. And I had all this clothing and it was like I felt so good. Just like how you had the big TV, the PlayStation, it was, yeah.
It's the fruit of where you place your time in. It's not about the jacket or about the television. It's about the result you got by putting your time in, and that's a very rewarding experience. And but yeah, of course, yeah, and it's great. I mean, you grew up with the internet, you grew up with all this technology, and you found your way within that. That's great. I think that's the way, you know. You see an opportunity, or maybe you don't see it, but when you see it, you grab it. And that's what you do. You see that that has a result. It gives you feedback, and you do something with that feedback. That's the way we have to live. That's it. You take what it feel, makes you feel good, you take what creates something good, and you stick to that. And you leave whatever damages you or what you're busy with. You know, that's it. You just don't. Why you have it would be stupid, no, to repeat things that are not good for you. It's like just have that clarity.
Being in your space, Enum, what's your journey with sort of like happiness and sort of going through ups and downs? Like, for example, me personally, like over the last 2 years, man, so many ups and downs. Like, even last weekend, like yesterday, like 2 days ago, I came home late from the city. I was, we went out karaoke, singing, and came home late. And then the next day, I was just like down, exhausted. And I think maybe 2 weeks prior, I was productive, I had a lot of momentum. But even within that momentum, I think there was like a 2, 3 day in between where I just felt down and I had to push through to get work. But I'm learning how to embrace it, feel it, not question it, and search for happiness. What's your journey been like, Aiden?
Also ups and downs, and that's all fine, you know, and I still encounter those. You don't have ups without downs, You would have the Netherlands. And the Netherlands is a flat country, I can tell you. Like, okay, maybe we have a hill somewhere, but that's it. Very boring, actually. Should be happy about your ups and downs. It's good. But if a down comes, and but it's more of a like if a down comes because you party too much or you've drank too much, then maybe there was something under the skin that made you go party and release that. What is that? You know, it wasn't the party itself. That's already you went too far with that, because party is great. To have party and to have people around you and be able to dance and do these things, you know. There was something else that made you, yeah, feel down those days. And what is that? Yeah, you can ask yourself. But the important thing is that you go, that you're able to let it again, let it go again, and then just get to your productive state. You know, that letting go sometimes is difficult, and depends in what ways. I think it's a good thing to be able to analyze that or look back. What made you feel that way, and can you do something about it? Then do something about it. Can't you do something about it? Go further to the up again, but use that as a good down, because without the downs, you don't have the ups. You know, that's it. That's how I do things. I also get sometimes depressed or anxious. Now, anxious, I actually only got one time with my partner. Yeah, I don't know what happened, but I got anxious, like, but depressed for sure. Yeah, or unhappy, or not content with what I'm doing. I always say I'm never really happy. I'm most of all content, and sometimes I'm happy. And sometimes I'm unhappy, which is all right, because it's not something continuously. It shouldn't be. It would be crazy. If you're happy all the time, then sudden it's all the time, it's just a normal, and there is no happiness in normal. It's like, yeah, there is no up and down. If it's here, there's no ups. It's if you're
Cool.
like here, it's all the way
Happy.
like this. It's like, yeah, it's the same. Looks the same, you know.
One thing I've been noticing is like when I do go out, if I go drinking or partying, the next day my willpower is much lower and I start going on social media, I start going on YouTube, and all of a sudden my brain just craves dopamine. It wants more interaction, it wants to eat something nice, and since my willpower is very low, I keep consuming and it's sort of like I'm craving. And then like even today I've gotten back to work, it's Monday again, and I've been intermittent fasting, but today at midday I just wanted to eat something, and I couldn't stop myself and I ate, and like my body was just craving stimulation.
If you're in touch with your body, that's okay. You know, you got to do what you feel. If this this thing of you can do two things after a good party night out when we got drank too much, that is, or drink less next time, or do some Wim Hof breathing. When you feel like hangover-ish, and before you have eaten anything, you wake up. I know it's a little bit hard. Open our app, do our breathing bubble. Or do a YouTube. It's for free on YouTube. We got all kinds of like 27 languages. We want to create all the languages on YouTube for our breathing bubble. But do that for 11 minutes and see how you feel. And I'm sure you did it, but after, maybe not after drinking, you know? Because after drinking, you just wanna, yeah, fuck it. You don't want to do anything. You want to lay down in bed. But do it just for fun. Just, you know, next week, you didn't plan to go out on Saturday. Go out, get pissed, and then the next day do the breathing, just as a little experiment. We have to be experiments. We have to be the researchers, right? So it's all beneath the flag of an experiment, not of drinking. So just yeah, do that. And otherwise, if you don't want to do that, then drink less, and that's it. Yeah.
When you're sort of doing the Wim Hof breathing, like what's happening? I'll sort of share my experience and you can tell me like if I'm on the right track. I've been doing it for the last 90 days, every day, and doing the 30 breaths, holding it. Now I think I can do around 3 minute breath hold at the moment after three rounds. And then I've noticed that when you're holding your breath, in order to hold your breath for that long, you're sort of really forced to slow your body down, really feel it, feel your thoughts, slow your brain down, slow your heart rate down, and sort of you're really forcing yourself to slow down. So it's like meditation, but a much higher level of meditation, because meditation, you're still breathing, you're not forced to clear your mind. But in this state, I'm forcing myself to clear my mind, and all of a sudden, I'm like getting more and more self-aware. And I'm also noticing that, after I've taken a deep breath, I'm starting to try to move the oxygen around, and I'm starting to slowly learn how to control my body and get self-awareness. And I feel like this whole journey has just been me starting to become more aware of my body. And also, maybe when I hold my breath for 30 minutes and I'm wanting air, adrenaline starts coming, and that also flushes out the body and that cleans your body. That's been my experience so far. I don't really know the science behind it, but yeah, what is the Wim Hof method?
Me neither. I also don't know the science about it. That's my sister. And for not feeling these downs, I just drink less the day before. That's my way. No, I'm just joking. First of all, it's not about the times. It's about what you were describing afterwards, this feeling of flushing the negative energy out and feeling good afterwards. Then you did it well. It's not about the 3 minute breath hold. You will encounter days that you will do maybe a 2 minute or 1.5, because you got something more going on within yourself. But if you feel better afterwards, then you've done it well. And just continue till you feel better afterwards. Yeah, maybe you need 5 rounds, maybe you need 3 rounds, it doesn't matter. And the science behind it, you can read all about that. I'm not going into the, I'm not a teacher myself. I'm busy with other parts of the method. I can, of course, tell you things about it, but it's better to read about those. It's just great for you. It makes you feel better, more focused, open. You can take away blockages you have within yourself. You can bring up traumas, what we see, and just check it out yourself. You have to try it yourself. I'm not gonna explain 20 things. If people, how to understand it is by feeling, by doing it. Do it. If it feels right, it is right, and keep to it. That's it.
Do you do the Wim Hof breathing method daily? Do you do cold showers
No,
or?
not daily. I don't do it on a regular basis. I do it. I do it. For example, 3 years ago, I broke my arm. And I got 2 plates, but because it was an external break, so my bone came out, there was infection on the bone. And because the plates are on top of it, they can't treat it with antibiotics. So they were very, very, and it had infection on the bone. So they were very scared that I would get an infection throughout my whole body in that moment, in that week. And I wasn't scared at all. I was doing my breathing exercises, and like my dad used to tell me, and I felt really good. I felt great. I wasn't scared at all. And they wanted to keep me in the hospital. I said, "Fuck this! I'm going away." And I asked my brother and my friend to pick me up, and we went away. And of course, I got a couple of operations more. There's still the infection there, but it doesn't get to me, And now it's healing up again. Bit by bit, the body's doing what it needs to do. So I don't do these regular things. I do take a cold shower sometimes when I feel that I want to take it. I try to take deep breaths when I feel anxious. The other day, I did those, and it felt great. So I'm trying most of all to be aware of how I feel and do the things with that. I see the breathing. If I feel right and I do the breathing, it's like a trip. It's a drug. It's insane. I get like crumbled up. So it's also my work. It's my dad. I don't want to give him too many credits, I need to be against him a little bit. So I'm not gonna do what he tells me what to do, Because yeah, he tells me every day, man. He says, "Hey, go do some breathing. Go take the ice bath. You really should do it." I said, "Dad, man, fuck this. No." So, but yes, I apply it when it's needed, and when I feel that it's needed. But I don't do it on a regular basis. But you know, sports is also great, and I know I have to do sports because I like working with the computer so much. It made me like welcome. I don't know. So if you can see it, see my neck.
Yeah, I'm the same. I think I'm the same.
Yeah, the only way to get rid of that is by moving and by doing sports. I know about it, but I don't do it. Yeah, it's like I wake up, I go to my baby, I do things, I'm with him. I love sleeping. I sleep till 7, 7:30. I love it. I go to bed at 10, 11. I love it. And in between that, my baby is going to kindergarten, or you know, at 9 o'clock, I'm going to the office normally. He goes to kindergarten, or when he is at home, I go to the office 9:15. I am with him. Then I work at office. I work at night in my head, and when I get at home at 5:30, I'm with the baby, and I just chilling with him till 7:30, and then at 7:30. I could do some sports, but I can also like hug with my woman, which I haven't seen all day. And that's what I love. So I can make room, I can wake up earlier, but at this moment, yeah, I don't have enough motivation to do it. You know, I need to feel the motivation. So everything, I feel really content in how everything goes. I'm okay with my neck, I'm okay with my back. I don't nag about it. It's there. I know it. I'm aware of it. But, well, I'm okay with it. So
Yeah.
it's the same thing, you know, like with my breathing and my ice baths. And of course, I can tell everyone, yeah, I'm doing it every day. And it's just not true. So there you go.
Because like I went through like a similar thing where I remember there was a period where I was had a crazy morning routine. I was waking up early, cold shower, meditation, reading affirmations, manifesting, reading a book, and by the time I got to work, I was exhausted. I was like, this is
Can
what the
stress you
opposite.
out,
Yeah.
man.
I was
You know,
like,
when healthy habits stress you out, they're not healthy. I can
yeah.
tell you. Diets also, if you are so strict with being this or being that, it's stressful, man. It's not good for you. At least not for your overall happiness. And of course, you can be this, you can see like your environment is doing it. You fit into a certain environment. You can move yourself there. And maybe that's a rewarding thing. But if you stress about it, I don't think it's good for you. That's it.
Talking about that, one thing I've been loving is your music journey. You're like really good with the internet. Tell me about that, Anam. Like you have the, and that's becoming popular. You know what I've been seeing, Anam? A lot of sound healing. That's a whole wave. That's a different wave.
It's a different wave. No, I do it because I love to do it. You know, a friend of mine was doing it like 4 or 5 years ago, and I picked on. He left his pen at my place, and then I used to play guitar before of that. It's always been there. My dad used to play a lot of guitar when I was young, and just autodidact. You know, I took it, played a little bit, loved it, and kept on doing it. But it's just a hobby, you know. And then when I broke my arm, I couldn't even do it for years. Then I was still doing it after my operation, and which I shouldn't, because it has some vibration going on. You know, I don't think it's good for healing the bone. But other people say, no, it's sound healing. Yeah, well, no, it's I'm slapping I'm slapping on it, and I don't think that's a good thing. It doesn't matter what kind of note comes out of it. But yeah, so I'm picking it up now again, and I played last time yesterday. So a friend came over to jam because I normally played always alone, but nowadays I'm playing a little bit with my dad, with friends, and yeah, I love it. I just love playing for a while, and it doesn't go. It's not more than 10 minutes, or a session, or 15, but it brings me to rest, and my partner loves it. So when I'm playing, she's happy about it, and I'm having my 15 minutes of of relaxness, and afterwards I put it away again. That's it. So I used to post a lot about it before, and then I saw that like it wasn't about playing anymore. It was about posting, you know. And then I left. I thought, fuck it. I'm leaving the socials for 3 years, but I couldn't play either way. So yeah, what did I have to post about? I can't play. And okay, I can play a bit. Okay, I can post again. No. But yeah, it's I love to do it. So it's not something I practice like a long time. I just take it. It's a 15 minute. I do it some days more, and but sometimes I leave it for a month, you know, and then but I love to do it. And yeah, that's it. I placed on with Niraj. Niraj, a friend of mine, does the Soma breath. I don't know if you know it, but he's great with music, man. And yeah, we got together like 3, 4 years ago. I'm doing much more things, but he made dance tracks out of it. You know, that was
Oh,
cool. That's
wow.
cool. So you can find those on Spotify. They are cool, but they are not really the instrument. It's more a dance track, you know. So now I want to record a couple of things with a friend of mine and a friend of my dad, Tahir Berman, Sher Sherman. He's a great guitarist. It's insane how beautiful he plays, and he adapts to you know, because I can't hold rhythms. I
Yes.
don't know what I'm doing. I'm just doing what I like to hear, and he makes magic out of it. You know, it's incredible. And so I'm going to record a couple of things with him, which motivates me again to pick it up. You know, because I know that what you can see two videos with him on YouTube. It's In the Moment. It's called In the Moment, and one is called, what was it called?
Bring it
Doesn't
up.
matter.
Yeah,
Yeah, it's right with Tahir Sheshimon. Sorry.
I'll get my editor, pop it up.
Yeah. It's like with Sher Sherman and Enam Hof. You can find it on YouTube. But those songs, and it was just jamming. So one In the Moment was the first time I jammed with him. We just played a iPhone, and that's the recording. That's the sound of the iPhone and the image of the iPhone in my garden. But he made a little compilation out of it, and another one Under the Sun. That's what it's called. It's also where, again, jamming. I just do something and he plays over it. I think it's magic. But I want to create it like make it nice, you know, and make it nice something that has the respect towards him also. Because yeah, I'm just playing there and he just does an improvisation and makes it beautiful. But it can, yeah, I can do better with that, you know.
That
So, but
reminds
that's,
me.
yeah, little things I love. Sorry.
I was just gonna say, like, I've been learning jazz piano recently, and it's very
Yeah.
similar. Jazz piano, it's all about everyone, like all the different band members, they take turns, they feel each other out. It's like this pull and gab. It's, you know, it's like it's all, you know, there's a general chord you go by, but then it's a lot of freestyling. It's very similar.
That's beautiful, man. To be able to play something with other people is incredible. And I can't do it. If someone else plays, I can't like follow it. I need to do my thing, and someone else. So I'm a little bit, I'm still a little bit, not compatible with a lot of people playing music, you know, because yeah, it's just I'm not that good at it, but I do love it. When it comes together with someone, it's magic for me, at least for my ears and my heart and my everything. And it's like, wow, I'm still listening to those videos once in a while, and I'm hearing his guitar making everything together, and then I hear all my faults, and I say, but he makes up for it, you know. It's incredible. Tahir Sher Sherman, look him up. He's incredible.
I'm the exact same. I struggle with counting beats. Like it's not natural to me. I'm more logical, analytical, but I'm starting to learn how to feel the music, learn the counting. It's tough, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe not something you want to do, but if you want to play with others, you need to.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it gets out of tone. It's horrible.
Yeah.
That's fucked up. Hey man, if we go to each other someday, and you're in Europe or so, we'll play some together. See what happens. Both
Oh,
not being able to
it's
count.
gonna
Holy
be
shit! But it's gonna be fun. That's for
like
sure.
one thing that I'm realizing, like I'm currently on this journey of trying to figure out that balance, and you're sort of in a very similar trajectory. I'd love to get your thoughts where, like, sometimes I'm just working all day. Recently, I've been doing a hard stop at 5 p.m. I go on an afternoon walk every day. Sometimes I'm doing meditation every day. Sometimes I do it when I feel like it. Right now, I've been doing a thing where I wake up, I change, and I go straight to work. no more morning routine. So it's always this trying, and then sometimes I'm fear of saying no to everything, no partying, no drinking. Now I'm in a stage of saying yes to things. So it's this constant sort of wave, and I'm trying to figure out that balance where I don't want to do cold showers every single day forever, but then I know if I do nothing, it leads to a sort of downward cycle. So it's trying to find that balance, I guess. And I think what you shared was really insightful. It's like you do it when you have the motivation and you need to do it, but you don't force yourself to do it because the moment you force yourself, it's no longer positive.
I think there's like for everything there, for every situation, there is something you can improve that or do something with that. I think a routine, I'm not a believer of routines. I think routines suck. But for me, if I have to do every day the same thing, man, I get so bored. It's like I don't like it. But learning or seeing what, okay, this helps. Then, if I do this, it helps me with that. That's great. Those are tools, you know, those are tools you can use. You don't use a hammer every day. If you use the hammer every day, you go crazy. I have to fucking hammer every day, like creating these walls. No, sometimes I want to paint, sometimes I want to do this. So, you have these tools, and that's also in life, you know, and you use the tools when you need them. That's how I see it. So, at least that's how I see it. Not maybe some people and some different type of people do need routine. They do need to do every day this thing to be able to feel good. But then those are his tools, you know, and they have to, you also have like certain professions. Doctors use the same tool every day, and maybe it makes their life beautiful, and then they should do that. For me, routine kills. It kills me. It's just it, yeah. It doesn't work for me. If I every day have to do the repetitive things, I get like, I'm done, just done. I move on with something else. Maybe that's one of my problems also. I always need something new, you know.
What do you go to your dad for, Aiden? Like, do you go to like, would you go to him for like health, breathing, mindset? What things do you seek from your dad?
No. I go for my to my dad to sometimes play some music, to talk about work, and but also to be with as a family does. We just drink a coffee and make jokes, and that's the those are actually the best moments when we drink coffee and make really stupid jokes, like really stupid jokes, but they are really funny for us. They are maybe very offensive for others, but not for us, you know. And it's just stupid jokes. That's the best thing I go to for my dad, I think, to have fun and be and appreciate what we're doing and what we're having. And but besides of that, we talk a lot about work and about how can we improve things. Sometimes I think he can do things differently. Sometimes he thinks I can do things differently, and we talk about that. Sometimes we fight, and then we make up. Sometimes we make music, but I never go to train with him. He would love so, but I don't do that. He always goes, "Hey, let's do this exercise." And I got no, but I got my arm. No, you're right. You're right. Heal it first. Always got an excuse to get out, you know. It's a relationship. That's what we normally do. And besides of that, we have a working relationship. And those are the two things, actually.
What's your experience with like family? Like you had the extreme where you're independent for a long time. Now you're sort of really family-like. Like for me, I think, and I'm really close with my sisters, my mom, but I also know that my mom is very different to me. And if I spend too much time with my mom, I'll go crazy. So I try to like have my space, but then I love my mom. I appreciate, I know she loves me, but if I spend too much time with her, I sort of become her.
Yeah, but that's normal. Then don't spend too much time with her. I do the same with my dad. At a certain moment, I go away, or he goes away. He's also done after an hour or hour and a half here. He's like, I want to train. I want to do things. I don't want to sit here on the couch making stupid jokes all day. You know, everyone needs their space, and that's all okay. You know.
Did you always want to do something together with your dad? Because now I'm thinking about my dad. My dad's always wanted to do something with me, but my dad, he's in business as well, but he's never been successful. He's always partnered with the wrong people, and it would be hard for me to work with my dad, but he always wants to do something with me.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't talk for you, but I do think that it's important to, like, in what way doing something with you can also be like, okay, it can be hard, but can be also, because of that, very rewarding, eh? And if you can have a sort of influence on your dad, and your dad can be with you, you can be with your dad, it's actually a beautiful thing. Find something not so difficult maybe to do together. If you have a certain knowledge or a strength you possess clearly, then why not share it with your dad? It's your family, you know? And maybe he's just asking for some advice, but he wants to do things with you. But maybe he's just asking for some advice. And dads are like, there are dads are dads. Dads don't ask for advice to their kid. It's, you know, so it's, I think, a very beautiful thing. But check it out. Just on that thing, hey, dad, look, just be clear. I think I have a lot of things on my plate. But let's check out and what can we do together? And we'll plan so much time for it. Just set your boundaries and that's it. But doing something and him wanting to do something with you is cool, no? It's your dad. Yeah.
Now that's a very good insight. I need to sort of really figure out a different angle, because my dad's always coming with, he bought a nail salon and that's not working. He wants to go to Papua New Guinea to chop down wood and
See
sell
that?
wood. He wants to, start up a farm, and he has sheep and duck, and nothing is working.
Yeah, but it's cool that not everything needs to work. But he needs, maybe it's this thing that he needs to find something he's passionate about, but that also gives it back something. And maybe you can guide him with that. Like that would be incredible, no? If you would succeed in that. That would be incredible. It would be very satisfying, man. Right?
I never thought about that. You're
I mean,
right.
you can see it as a challenge. But
Yeah.
it shouldn't be a burden. It shouldn't be a burden because something that drags you down, you shouldn't say yes to. But if you can see it as a challenge, then why not? Just find something you can grow in together, maybe. I don't know. I don't know.
And
My
it's
dad
funny.
never asked me for my help. Eh? He actually says he doesn't need my help. But I know he does, so I just give it to him.
And in your situation,
I'm
what
sorry.
you
At 11, I got an appointment at no, but I'm loving the. If you have any questions more, we can continue this a little bit later. But at 11, I have an appointment at the office, so it's like for me a 15-minute drive. I have 9 minutes to prepare. But
Perfect.
if you want to do some other day, continue this because I really like the questions and where we're going to together. It's like some insights from your side, some insights from me, and I love where it comes together, you know. So I would love to give you some more time and have some more time of you. But otherwise, or we continue or we finish it off.
This is perfect. I think we can sort of wrap it up and we can do a part two in the future. Aiden, where can people find more about you, follow you on your music journey, follow about your dad, what you're working on? Please, where should people go?
Well, of course, our website, wimhofmethod.com, our YouTube channel, Wim Hof, if you search for Wim Hof. And yeah, if people want to practice, we have a great app, which is a freemium. I know it doesn't work well, but doesn't matter. You download the app, you can do the exercises. You can do the exercise my dad teaches. Then we have a paid version of it. Which you pay like 3 euros, 4 euros a month if you buy the year, which gives you all the features of the app, and it's a great tool to do your exercises. But if you don't have those 4 bucks, just go to YouTube, do the breathing bubble, which is for free, and it's a great breathing exercise. Which if you just do it every day, you get the results that are being promised, you know. And if you feel right with doing it, just continue doing so. You don't need to spend anything, you know, for that. But that's a little bit about it. If you want to find my music, you go to Spotify, search for Enam Hof, Enahm. Everyone writes it differently. Okay, even when I write it down in my email, people write it back like that. You wrote it well. So I was like, okay, Andy's cool. No. But yeah, and that's for the music, you know, if you like to hear some music, what I play. And otherwise, on my Instagram, there's a lot of instrumental, but I don't really do a lot on Instagram nowadays. But do check it out if you like the hang drum.
We'll bring everything up. We'll put all the links in the description below.
Easy does it, man. What I liked here was the conversation. And if people want to find us, they will find us for sure. I made that possible, you know.
Thank you so much, Aiden. I really appreciate you and your time. I love how honest you are, transparent, and even how you're just like a student of life and you're still trying to figure things out and you have this level of self-awareness and humbleness and sort of that egoless willing to sort of share. And then your story as well, like I think it's such, this is the first time I heard it. Like you went through so much and it's so impressive how you sort of made it. Like you can't, like it's insane how you looked after your family, your siblings all on your own, like when you were 18 and they were, you know, young. So it's amazing like journey and I really appreciate you and your time today.
No, you're too kind, man. Your voice and your presence is very calm and relaxed. Thank you for that. I'm always a burst of, but I try to be like relaxed today, you know. But thank you very much for saying this because I really appreciate it. Sometimes I'm being seen as the dick or the asshole because I need to be. I get so much bullshit around me and around my dad. Everyone wants to do something for him. And oh, yo, no, yeah, and you get all kinds of strange things around you, you know. So I try to not be influenced by it, but so that's means a lot that you said this, and thank you very much. So anytime you want a second run, I'm there, okay?
Thank you so much, Anam. You're on this beautiful journey, and I just love hearing it. Guys, this is another episode of the podcast. Hope you guys got value. If you guys made it this far, I really appreciate your time. And I'll see you guys next week. Peace.
Cheers, mate.